LSU has its man, to me, a perfect fit. We'll find out about him coming up. The secret, well, not so secret, but the early morning coaching staff meetings at LSU football that has this team heading in the right direction. KD, Pat Beverly, that story, and all things NFL related. Got a busy day. Sit back, relax. The next 2 hours are ours. Today, Thursday, April 18th, 2019.
Bogdanovich against Horford, switches to the left hand, drives, cradles the ball. Horford stays with him and blocks the shot clean. Jaylen Brown up the left side, has a step on Collison. He's going to take it all the way, kick to the corner for a Tatum three.
Oh, bang.
Ingles in and out, no good. Harden with rebound number 10, has 8 assists as well, 29 points. Harden for 3, straight away, in here, good. So much for the Jazz push. The lead is back to 22. 32 for Harden. He's 6 of 12 now from downtown.
And the right-hander deals.
Swung on, driven to deep right. It is high, it is far, it is gone. It's a grand slam. Let the Gardy party begin. Brett Gardner plants one in the right field seats. It is a grand salami. And the Yankees, down 3-1, now take a 5-3 lead.
And with that, we say good afternoon. And, man, the weather is nasty, but the sun, to me, is shining over that beautiful place we call Louisiana State University, because officially announced today, Scott Woodward, the new athletic director or director of athletics, whatever you want to call it, is coming back home. I think he's perfect for the job. I'm thrilled by it. I am excited about it. And we're going to talk about it today amongst a plethora of things. And we're going to start off first with our good friend of the program. We always get him on when it's time to talk about thoroughbred horse racing because he's one of the best in the business at handicapping horse races. But he's also a Baton Rouge native, went to grade school with Scott. Went to high school, went to college with him. They're near and dear friends. And that's our good friend, Michael Bakeshock, who's kind enough to join us to kind of give us a little insight as to what he knows. Scott, Michael, thanks for the time, buddy. How are you?
I'm great. I'm really good today after, seeing the news yesterday and reading about it officially this morning. I'm so excited for LSU and happy they've made such a fantastic choice.
I'm with you. I think, if you have boxes and you want to check it, one, Scott loves LSU. Number two, he's from Baton Rouge. He's from Louisiana. He understands the people. He understands the culture. He understands what LSU means to this state. He loves sports. He has been involved on the athletic side, the academic side, and what you really need in this part of the world, he was heavily involved in the political side of things. Y'all both kind of came up together, and you both kind of started your professional career in the same venue. Kind of take us back through that.
Well, and I know, Jordy, that Louisiana is different than other places, especially, we play politics almost in everything, and especially in, the university arena, and even more so probably in the athletic arena. So, Scott grew up, and it got a good political background early on, and he's parlayed that into, when he was working for Emmert, the legislative arena. And then, he's just always, been successful wherever he's gone. And so, I say that he's almost, I can't imagine a better fit just in the qualities that he's displayed in his career. He understands, he loves LSU, as you said. This is his home. He graduated here. But he's had success in two very different places. Seattle, Washington, and College Station, Texas are pretty dissimilar.
Bipolar.
Yet he has had tremendous success in both of those places. And those two universities were, you know, sorry to see him go. So we're just happy. I'm just over the moon for him, his family, and for LSU, because I just think it's a great fit. He checks, as you said, all the boxes for us.
I'm with you, Michael Bakechak, kind enough to join us. I kind of got an inkling about this when I heard through the grapevine that he just joined up in the Baton Rouge Country Club. So you know what I'm saying? Come on now, about 2 months ago. Come on, Michael.
Well, you know, I've had a conversation with folks. You know, Scott had a goal. Once he realized that he liked and was successful at the athletic director position, which he kind of just fell into in Washington under Mark Emmert.
Right.
But he did such a great job, you know, in the interim that he decided he wanted to give it a shot as a permanent, and he did, fantastic job with their stadium funding, hiring two coaches, football coaches, one that no one else could hire.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, so I think, you know, he played his cards, you know, giving himself the best opportunity if an opportunity ever presented itself to come back to LSU. And, you know, I don't know about joining the country club, but he kept in contact with folks here. He kept in contact with, you know, some power brokers and some politicians and boosters, and just like, look, if anything ever happened here, he liked where he was. They compensated him well.
Uh-huh.
He was doing a great job. But if an opportunity presented, he wanted to be able to decide whether he should take advantage of it. And an opportunity presented itself, and, you know, the university took advantage of it. So. He never left here. He comes back here a lot. He certainly keeps in contact with a lot of friends that he has here, you know, in the state. So his heart was always here, and he was always looking if an opportunity presented, could he come back as athletic director? And it did.
Michael Bakechak, kind enough to join us, lifelong friends with Scott Woodward, the new director of athletics for LSU. I've been around a long time, and I've seen some hires that have been made with coaches that became very, very successful. Nick Saban, really made his mark as the head coach at LSU. Dale Brown made his mark as the basketball coach at LSU. Skip Bertman made his mark as the baseball coach. I've never seen in my time a more successful individual that LSU hired to come in. They've always taken, like, people that, we're not so sure, but, boy, they were great when they got here, and they became great. Scott Woodward checks all the boxes before he gets here, and to me it's one of the more successful hires in the history of the university.
Well, on paper it certainly, you know, it is. And I do not think that it's an aberration that, you know, Scott is friends with and keeps very close contact with both Skip Bertman and Nick Saban, because they are two of the very most successful people in the history of their sports. And, you know, I'm sure that he's learned a lot from them and taken a lot of advice from those two fellows. And, you know, again, in the places that he's been, he's had tremendous success. And I think that there's nothing but success ahead for him here at LSU.
Take me back to those great school days at Mercy and Catholic High. What kind of a competitor was he? Come on now.
He loved sports. I mean, we used to go to the New Orleans Jazz games together.
Nice.
A lot of LSU football games. He played. I hope he doesn't mind me saying, but he played competitive tennis when he was a youngster.
Yes.
And he was very good. He was a top level competitive tennis player. But he just loved sports. I mean, he never gave up, even though he wasn't in the arena of sports for many years in his professional career. He follows sports as closely as anybody. We've even attended a few horse races together, as you may expect. But he has a love of sports, and so I think that served him well in his career. And when he finally got to Washington and got the opportunity, to serve as athletic director, it really just kind of fit into his skill set. And his skill set matched that particular job. And again, the success he's had there at A&M, that's the characteristics of a very good executive and someone who knows their job very well.
Michael, I think it's a great day for LSU. I think there is so much trust and belief in this man, unlike his predecessor, who never garnered that with anyone at any point in time. And I'm not throwing dirt on a grave in any way, shape, or form, but I just think the trust factor and the excitement factor is there because, again, he knows this place, he loves this place, and he exudes this place. And that's what this place needs above and beyond anything else.
Well, I would agree with that. I just hope, he's not a miracle worker.
No.
But we don't really need miracles here.
Nope.
We have such a great institution, a great foundation. We need a great steward. We need somebody who is involved, communicates with the boosters and with the public. And I kind of feel like, and again, I'm not throwing dirt either, but I kind of feel we didn't have that. We had that when Skip was athletic director.
Yes.
He was always involved. And, Scott may not be as visible, but he's definitely connected. And
right.
I think that's a very important trait for an athletic director, especially at LSU.
Michael, thank you for your insight, buddy, and happy Easter to you and yours, okay?
Thank you, Jordy.
All right, buddy, you take care. Michael Baikshock, kind enough to join us, and we'll continue the conversation. We'll take you behind the closed doors. Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated, as we continue talking about the newest leader of that multi-million-dollar organization known as LSU Athletics. Next, here on 103.7 The Game.
Get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
Well, welcome back. Supposed to get Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated in, but just prior to this, hurts my feelings. I thought we were so prominent and so prevalent, but I guess we take a back seat to when the governor's office calls you. And so Deli is on the phone with John Bel Edwards as we speak, so we'll understand and we'll look forward to reading his material on this. But again, Scott Woodward, the new director of athletics for Louisiana State University. I think it's great. We talked about it yesterday. We just talked about it with Michael Baikshock. He checks all the boxes. He really, really does. And he is already, from the many people who have texted me, emailed me, called me, there is this feeling of trust that has already come about. One of us is back and running the show. And that's very, very, very important here where politics rules the roost. Everything is politically connected. It just is. Politics is everything here. Everything in Louisiana is political. Look, the decision, the suspension, the firing, all this stuff, the suspension and the reinstatement of Will Wade, the removal of Oliva, the hiring of Woodward, this goes well beyond the highest ranking school administrators. It just does. This comes from the very top. LSU's the only Power 5 program in this great state of ours. The only one. This place bleeds purple and gold. And it goes all the way up to the Louisiana State Capitol building. Not just his governor, but governors from the past, from as far back as Huey Long. They go out to football practices. They go hunt with the head football coach. They go to dinner with the coach. I mean, they get photos on the sidelines, all these things. And that governor, for years and years, gets to handpick the most powerful group of decision makers there are at LSU, and that is the Board of Supervisors. And those Board of Supervisors have the authority to hire and fire many of the campus's most important key leaders. So these 16 board members, very rarely do they ever have a total agreement on matters. But it doesn't take a total. It just takes the most powerful of the powerful. And they had it in for Joe Oliva for some time now. Make no mistake about it. LSU just went out. They've got over $1 billion fundraising campaign going on, and it wasn't going very well because nobody believed and had faith and had trust in Joe Oliva. They just didn't. It's not difficult for those at LSU to understand what Scott Woodward's all about. An LSU alum born and raised in Baton Rouge, his in-state connections run deep. He visits Baton Rouge and the state often because his parents still live in Baton Rouge. And he learned from the best of the best. He's perfect. And what he does is he gives transparency. Let's see if we can get Deli now, Clint, because he just got off the phone, so he's waiting for our phone call. So there we go. So we'll talk to him. And Joe Oliva never, ever, ever gained the trust of this faction of the world. He was very behind the scenes. He was not good in front of a camera. He was very terse, very curt, very unsouthernly. And that's just the facts. That's just the way it is. So we'll get Ross Dellinger on here in just a second to take us behind the scenes as to what he recollects about this and this power struggle that always seems to go on. But for the first time in my recollection, have you ever seen LSU and the athletic department handle a transition better? They've been working on this for a while, and they pulled the trigger because they knew they had their man. Ross Dellinger, yes, we take a back seat when the governor calls, but only when the governor calls, Ross. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Yeah, it wasn't exactly the governor, but let's just say it was around the governor's office. So you got to take those calls.
Yeah, you got to take those.
It was someone who kind of grew up. Works for the governor now and grew up with Scott Woodward as I'm kind of working on a story about him a little bit.
Very good. Very good. I think he checks all the boxes, but take me behind the scenes. This isn't something that just happened overnight. This has been in the works for a while, and some powerful members of that board were determined that Joe Oliva wasn't the right fit. Why wasn't he the right fit, you think?
Well, you know, I think more so what happened here is that, you know, and I kind of wrote about a little bit of this at SI.com, but when you get a candidate who's interested in the job like that one, almost no matter who you have in the position, you know, you've got to at least think about it. And when you have somebody in the position that is unpopular, obviously among the fans, is, you know, not great at in the public right. image, maybe has worn out the welcome and been there 11 years and had all the stuff, you know, going on with the Will Wade issues. When you have all that combined, you have a guy who's from Baton Rouge, LSU graduate, you know, former LSU administrator, big time mover and shaker in the world of college athletics, who's made some incredible hires over his career. You got to think about it. I think that's more so what happened is that when somebody like that is interested, you know, to me, I feel like, you know, Joe Oliva would still be LSU athletic director if Scott Woodward weren't interested. Now, I don't know how much longer he would be athletic director, but I do get that feeling that because someone of Scott's stature was interested, that changed everything and sped up the process.
Well, Well, let's be honest now, Ross. He got interested because somebody called him. Some influential power broker called him and said, "Come on now, things aren't going well here. Would you like to come home?"
Yeah, I think that had to happen. No doubt. Yeah, I think there was certainly interest gauged, and the interest was, I guess, reciprocated, and then the ball got rolling. You know, and that phone call was made, as I wrote today, about, you know, 3.5-4 weeks ago, about roughly a month ago. Uh-huh. I think as the ball got rolling and things sounded like they were finalized over the weekend.
LSU never handles something like this as efficiently and as well-mannered as they have. That's a first to me. That gives me hope, Ross.
Yeah, you know, several people compared it to the Les Miles stuff in 2015. You know, like this was how it was, you know, that was supposed to be handled. And the funny thing is, that was how it was being handled up until maybe the agent of a certain head coach at Houston leaked the story to the Texas media to get Texas moving at the negotiating table. So it was happening like that. But you're right. You know, you don't see a lot of this happen at LSU. There's just a lot of public missteps. There's a lot of PR missteps at LSU over the years. And this one, man, was just pretty smooth and kept behind the scenes.
Amazing.
And obviously was was being celebrated as a huge success.
Amazing. What's Joe Oliva's legacy in your mind?
You know, well, he was at LSU for the big boom of the SEC network and TV rights and all that money and making money. So, you know, financially, his legacy is going to be somebody that, you know, oversaw an incredible, you know, increase in budget and things like that, in growth. I think he did a lot with facilities, you know, with improvement in facilities, specifically Tiger Stadium and the kind of beautification of it and things like that. You know, his hiring of coaches is probably something that one of the things that people are going to look at in, you know, maybe you can't judge it right now, but down the line might judge him harshly on, you know, especially when it came to basketball. There were some issues in the current
men's
hire
and
he's made.
Yep.
Yeah. And the current hire he made, of course, in the men's world has won and all, but is also obviously drawing some interest from places that you don't want interest from. Nobody wants the NCAA here. So, but you know, his biggest downfall, what I wrote about today, is him in the public eye and him just as a face of a program. Yes. It just didn't work out. You know, he's not one of those people that's going to be courting around and having great relationships with the media and boosters. And that's kind of what you need down in the South. You know, that's kind of part of it. You know, he was a fish out of water. You know, he really was.
And he was told that it never, ever sunk in. All right, look, we're done. We're out of time. Tell the governor thanks a lot, and or his people. Really appreciate that. But we look forward to reading what the governor and his office had to say on SI.now. So thank you very much.
All right, Jordy. Thank you.
Take care, man. Take care. Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated. When we come back, we'll get away from that. We'll talk some football. We'll go behind the scenes. Bruce Feldman of The Athletic takes us to these early morning meetings in the football department. Stay with us. Interesting stuff ahead.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the app.
We continue rolling on this Thursday, and it's a privilege and an honor to welcome in one of the most revered writers in America when it comes to college athletics, Bruce Feldman of The Athletic, kind enough to join us. Bruce, thank you for the time, my friend, and how are you?
I'm good. I appreciate the kind words. Thank you, Jordy.
Well, they are very true. First, your thoughts on LSU and the new athletic director, Scott Woodward, coming from Texas A&M. What does that mean to you?
It's a pretty remarkable 180. I don't think it's shocking that Joe Oliva's been is out, but I think what was surprising to me, just in the fact that Scott Woodward just hired his basketball coach, made this big, terrific hire of Buzz Williams 2 weeks ago, and now he's moving on to coming home to Baton Rouge now. It doesn't surprise me that he'd want to be back at LSU. I mean, that's been such a big part of his life, and obviously he worked there. But just that dynamic, I would have thought whatever, if there was anything that would have, it could have taken for him to, you know, I don't know how much Texas A&M has deep resources, what they could have thrown at him to stay. Obviously, from what I'd heard, that there was some challenges with the job, just in terms of the chancellor there can be a difficult guy to work with.
Egotistical, right?
No, a lot. But but look, this is coming home for Scott Woodward, and obviously LSU has great resources and is a unique place too. And so he's been there before, and I think it's just an interesting dynamic, certainly between the two schools. But obviously LSU won out on this one.
Yeah, you mentioned something very important, I think, and it tells me something. It just clicked. You know, he hired Buzz Williams a couple weeks ago. That tells me this didn't just happen overnight with LSU. This has been in the works for a while. So it tells me, one, he was still doing his job, knowing that he really wanted to come to LSU, and he got the best coach he could for the A&M basketball program. And Buzz Williams, I think it's a slam dunk hire. So he did his job still knowing that he was wanting to come home. Tells me a lot about the man.
Yeah, look, I mean, if I'm an A&M fan, I'm like, you couldn't ask for much more. He got a ton of money to get Jimbo Fisher to leave FSU and to go there. And then he got Buzz Williams to come home too, because Buzz Williams had been at A&M. I think that's a great hire. So he's left it about as well as you could have hoped if you're a AD who hadn't really been there that long.
That's,
you know,
right.
And yeah. Look, I mean, I was around him when he was at Washington, and he made a grand slam hire getting Chris Peterson to lead Boise to go there. And now that's the best program in the Pac-12. So that was a good job on him.
Bruce Feldman of The Athletic, kind enough to join us. Okay, take us into this coaching clinic inside the room where LSU's football staff is starting every day. Folks, subscribe to The Athletic. This is a great, great article that gives you so much insight into just how complicated this world of college football is, and the minutiae that is so important in the difference between success and failure. How did you stumble upon all this?
Well, I was in around LSU for 3 days 2 weeks ago, and I went down there for a couple other stories I was working on that'll run on The Athletic later this offseason. But, you know, I was talking to one of their analysts the night before, and he was telling me about this meeting. I was like, okay, this is pretty fascinating, where basically now half the staff goes in, meets at 6 a.m. for what Ed Ogeron calls the O-line, D-line appreciation hour. And Ogeron was nice enough to let me sit down on and be a fly on the wall. And it is fascinating, because I truly believe that I probably learned more about where LSU is personnel-wise at the most, you know, integral parts of development, and that is at the point of attack, from watching them watch that meeting and pick apart every little detail of a combo drill that they ran the day before at practice. And, you know, when it comes to it, I think you can have, obviously they have a ton of 4- and 5-star talent, but ultimately, and Ed Ogeron was very adamant on several occasions as he pointed to the screen, that's Georgia, that's Alabama. This is basically the things we need to get better at, and, you know, make sure it is a priority, and how we're teaching it and putting it as an emphasis. And so you could see, and people who read that story will get a real sense of how the little details and how critical alignment is, and how a couple of inches matters in where you're lined up, or where your foot is, or where your toe is.
Yes.
Those details are huge. And that was a fun story to work on, to see how the nuances and everything like that matters and is critical to, you know, as I put in the story, to try to get a program to go from being very good to trying to be great.
Yeah. Bruce Feldman of The Athletic, kind enough to join us. This is not the first time you've been at LSU. You've been there times before. Do you sense a change in the mood, in the environment of that coaching staff now, currently, as maybe opposed to the past?
I do. You know, the last time I was there was 2 years ago. Ogeron had just been made the permanent head coach. It was right before signing day. And I got to be honest, you know, Matt Canada had just been hired a few weeks earlier as the OC. You could tell there was already a little bit of an awkward dynamic within the staff with that. You had a couple other guys who were, you know, it just seemed like they were not going to be there much longer. And so what I've noticed here, significantly so this time, was it was a much more cohesive staff. I think, you know, everybody seemed to be more comfortable in their roles and in the direction things were going. I think Ogeron had a much more of a better feel for how this thing is running. It seemed to be running a lot more smoothly, and you could tell they had some really good momentum coming off, you know, I guess it's the first 10-win season they've had in a few years there. And there was some real energy there. I think Joe Brady, the guy they brought in from the Saints, his energy and his ideas, I think, has been a big help to them. So I came away thinking this is a program that has a real shot.
Okay.
Not just be a top 10 team, but make a run at a playoff spot this year.
God, you're just the new biggest fan in this part of the world. People love you now for saying that. But LSU's made a commitment, because you go around and see other schools, but it's these consultants that have been in prominent roles in their past that I'm sure are aiding and abetting this meeting and other meetings and practice plans throughout the course of the day.
Yeah, and I think there's the expertise. Now, there's some things that these analysts are not allowed to do by NCAA rules in terms of just actually, you know, being hands-on with some of the players.
Right,
but in
right.
terms of helping coach with the coaches, whether it's game plan or scheme or some of the detail stuff, that I think is a big addition, because, you know, when they go in, and the Alabama's had these guys for years, it's not to say LSU didn't, but I think when you look at some of the intel and some of the expertise that is added in for a Dave Aranda, for a Steve Ensminger, certainly for an Ed Ogeron, I think that really is another level that I think they can utilize and are utilizing. And I saw, you know, like, people who read this story on The Athletic will get a better window into that. You know, it's not just James Craig, the O-line coach. Now it's Mark Hudson, who was a two-time All-American, you know, years ago at Oklahoma, and came from the Cleveland Browns, where he was an NFL assistant O-line coach. I mean, it's just really another level that they can really utilize and delve into. And I think that's why I think you see such a good exchange of ideas and that level of expertise and detail you can get into.
The article is "The Coaching Clinic Inside the Room Where LSU's Football Staff is Starting Every Day." 6 a.m. It wouldn't be complete without Bags, Charlie Baglio. He's been a fixture ever since Nick Saban hired him, and he's been through, boy, if he could write a book, he and Sam Nader, what a book that would be.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, local knowledge there, and it was interesting to, you know, have some conversations before the meeting and then after with Bags. You know, he's seen it all, and I think, you know, again, at the end of the story, people get a little insight into his relationship there with LSU football, with Ogeron now. Bags has been through a lot in the last year. And, you know, I think that's a bond. And I think you see some of why there's such a connection within Tiger Stadium right now. And I think that's a cool part of it that I honestly didn't know existed until that particular meeting. And you see the dynamic and how it works.
You see every player. You go to all the top schools. You see how organizations are run. There is this perception that LSU kind of is like in the swamp, and they don't know what the heck they're doing, but they get an athletic director with a lot of skins on the wall, and you yourself said it looks like LSU football is more stable than it's been in a long, long time. Do you get the sense that these two things are joined together and they're moving in the right direction?
I do, and I can't obviously speak to the piece, you know, how Scott Woodward is going to interact with football right now or anything like that. Obviously, he's got, you know, the basketball situation is a big mess that they've got to sort out. But the parts that I think that's interesting, I think that you're hitting on a little bit, is the perception versus the reality. And
correct.
I don't know how much, you know, for the LSU fans who are going to read this story in The Athletic, they'll have a better window into what the reality is if they don't already, you know, sense it. But just, like, honestly, I didn't know Ed Ogeron was really into analytics until this trip, and just what that means. And I just think for a lot of people, they want to see him as the old, you know, gruff defensive line coach who was at Ole Miss, you know, 15 years ago. And he's a lot different than that guy now. And but for a lot of people, and it's a lot of people in the media, I think it's just very, you know, easier or convenient just to have one thought. And you forget, oh, this is the team that beat Georgia by 20 points mm-hmm. last year, the 110 game. You know, it's if you listen to a lot of folks in the media, they were told you LSU was going to go 6-6 last year, and they were going to be in the midst of a coaching search in football.
Right.
So, you know, sometimes we got to see what the reality is before we just, you know, kind of focused on the easy parts of this.
Well, Bruce, I thank you for your time. It's must-read material. Go to The Athletic and find it. It is really well done, and thank you. It's an honor to have you on. Thank you so much for your time, and have a great Easter holiday weekend. Thank you.
You too. It's been great being on with you.
All right, buddy. Bruce Feldman of The Athletic, kind enough to join us. And I didn't know Coach O was heavy into analytics. I had no idea. You know, but he's changed and he's learned with the tide. And it'll be interesting to see how the dynamic works, because the athletic director and the head football coach have to have a great working relationship. You saw how it didn't fit with Oliva and Les Miles. Now, Oliva made the hire of Ed Orgeron, so he had to really interact and work with him because they're tied at the hip. If Orgeron doesn't succeed, well, Oliva's out now, but he'd have been out sooner, right? So now here comes Scott Woodward coming in. He got the guy that LSU originally wanted. And there is that rivalry now between LSU and A&M that's grown exponentially from the 7 overtime game to the fracas after the game to all this. So it'll be very interesting. And I know Scott. It's hard not to get along with Scott. It's hard. He's a good dude. And he'll do very, very well. I see no issues whatsoever. And he was very honest when asked about the Will Wade thing. He says, look, I've got to get briefed on it. I don't know. I've been taking care of my business. I've been hiring a basketball coach. So let me be informed on this, and then we'll handle it. Upfront, honest approach. Thank you, Bruce Feldman, for coming on. LSU baseball is going to try and play tonight. They've moved the time back. Bill Franquez, the voice of Alec Box, will share all the info next here on a fast-moving Thursday edition.
There's only one place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Holford Show on 103.7 The Game.
We like our beer flat as can be. We like our dogs with mustard and relish. We got a great pitcher, what's his name? Well, we can't even spell it.
Welcome back, boys and girls. Yeah, that's the sound of and the song of baseball. And I'm looking outside right now, and I'm going, what in baseball? Are you kidding me? The voice of Alec Box Stadium, kind enough to join us, Bill Franquez. Baseball today, really? Hey, Bill.
Absolutely,
Bill?
Jordy.
Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. We're planning on baseball tonight, as threatening as the weather is right now. It's pretty ugly, but thought is that it's going to be out of here maybe within the next 2 to 3 hours. So we pushed the game time back to 8 o'clock. Tonight's game with Florida will start at 8 o'clock. And we feel like by 8 o'clock, certainly, we should be in good shape to play. Okay. The good news is that the field here, the outfield here at the box, drains extremely well. Of course, the tarp has been on the infield since yesterday, since the team finished up practice yesterday. So the field should be in good shape, and we feel confident that by 8 o'clock we'll be able to throw the first pitch.
We'll have the game here on 103.7 The Game. Some people may want to watch it on television. Has any adjustments been made as far as that's concerned?
The game will be televised on SEC Network, just as it was originally scheduled to be. So no change there.
Cool.
The only change is that it'll start 2 hours later than we first had it scheduled, but the game will start at 8 o'clock. It will still be televised on the SEC Network live.
Okay. Bill Franquez, the voice of Alec Box Stadium, kind enough to join us. Have we decided, has Paul and Alan decided on who a starting pitcher is going to be today, or is that hush-hush secret?
That is no longer a secret. It is now for public consumption that Mikhail Hilliard will be the starting pitcher tonight. And you know, hopefully they could get another 4 to 5 innings out of Mikhail as they did last Friday up in Missouri when Zach Hess started the game and had to come out after facing just 3 batters due to a pulled groin muscle. Mikhail just came straight off the bench, ended up working 4 1/3 innings, threw nearly 100 pitches, and that had been by far his longest outing of the year. So they feel as if you can do something similar to that again tonight, that gives the Tigers a chance as far as the arms are concerned and having the right amount of arms available throughout the weekend. And kind of an intriguing factor is that Coach Maneri mentioned yesterday that Zach Hess feels as if he could pitch in some fashion this weekend, not as a starting pitcher, but it's possible, conceivable, you could see Zach in the game at some point as a reliever.
Okay.
So we'll look for that tonight. I'm not sure if it'll happen tonight or not, but Coach Maneri hinted at that yesterday in meeting with the media that it doesn't appear as if Zach would start a game, but it's possible he could come in and perhaps work a couple of innings in relief, maybe as soon as tonight. So we'll see how that unfolds.
You know what's going to happen. He's going to strike out the side, and then here comes that rumbling. He's a better reliever than a starter. Paul.
You're right.
Give me an update on Zach Watson and Chris Reed. I'm hearing that they may even return as soon as tonight.
Yes. Coach Maneri is very, very encouraged by their progress. And I'd say there's a very good chance that both will be in the lineup tonight. Chris suffered a strained hamstring on Saturday at Missouri. Zach Watson, like Zach Hess, also suffered a groin injury on Friday night at Missouri. But both... And kudos to Coach Maneri and to trainer Corey Couture. They recognize that with the cold weather up there, you might risk injuring the muscles to a greater extent. So they were both removed from the games at the times they were injured and given the proper rest. They didn't play for the rest of the Missouri series. They didn't play in the game with UL Lafayette back on Tuesday night. So I think that giving them the proper rest and the proper care has helped them recover quickly, and it appears as if they both will be in the lineup tonight.
Interesting times at the old campus. You and I have been around a long, long time. We both remember Scott Woodward. We both had relations with Scott Woodward when he was here under Mark Emmert with the hiring of Nick Saban. Your thoughts on Scott Woodward?
Yeah, I think everyone here at LSU, athletic department, and of course LSU fans around the globe are very excited about Scott's hiring. Of course, we know him from his days working with Mark Emmert. Those are some great years in the early 2000s, as far as LSU athletics are concerned, with Chancellor Emmert and Scott as his primary assistant. Scott basically worked as the liaison between the chancellor's office and the athletics department. So everyone in the athletics department knew him very well. And he was a great PR man, obviously a very astute when it comes to hiring coaches, when it comes to evaluating personnel. So everyone here is extremely excited about it, and we definitely look forward to welcoming him back. I don't know exactly what the plans are, Jordy. I believe Scott will
be in town on Tuesday.
Yeah. I don't have all the details yet, but I think Tuesday is the day we'll reintroduce him to the LSU community. We'll have an introductory press conference. I believe the public is going to be invited.
Look for
some details coming out in the next few days.
That sounds terrific. I'm looking outside right now, and it is absolutely pouring down rain. All those renovations and the way that the field drains so well at the box will be tested, but we'll look forward to baseball tonight at 8 o'clock with you saying, welcome to the box, right?
Absolutely. I look forward to it. It should be great. Very important series, obviously. LSU, just a game out of first place in the overall SEC race. Florida, not with a gaudy record it normally has, but the Gators have won 4 of their last 5, so they have a sense of urgency to have a late push here.
Bill, thank you for your time, buddy.
All right, Joey, thank you.
All right, we'll wrap up hour number one, and we'll tell you what's coming up in hour number two, starting off with Hot Topics after this timeout, the Jordy Helfrich Show, Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. Man, that first hour went fast. We'll be right back.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pulled off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown!
Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
All right, hour number two of two on this Thursday, the 18th day of April, the year 2019. I hope you're safe out there because the heavens have opened up. They have opened up, so be careful. If you have to be out and about, man, listen, but don't text, right? Don't text. Be careful. Be safe. We've got 1 hour down. We've got 1 hour to go, a busy second hour. Larry Holder will join us from The Athletic. We'll talk about the New Orleans Saints schedule. Boy, they open up with four bang, 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 really good ones. Man, 2-2 doesn't look bad thinking about it. Grant Hughes, Kevin Durant back in the news. They've got that little Patrick Beverly in his head. We'll talk with Grant Hughes of the NBA about that. And the Schwab gets us ready for the NFL draft. So a busy second hour. Let's get busy ourselves as we do each and every day at this time of day. CD, hit that button as we go around the sports water cooler.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
Brought to you by Cajun Chef. Yes, the best in the world. CD, good afternoon. Raining like cats and dogs here. How about there?
Oh, trust me, it's been pouring down quite a bit, especially since around lunchtime over here, Jordy. My goodness.
Yeah. It's awful, so be careful. All right, exactly. What's up today? How about that first hour? How about that?
That first hour went by like an absolute breeze, Jordy. My goodness, first hour. But then again, when you have all the news to talk about that you do in the first hour of the show, it's understandable. But and we got to start off there, Jordy. Scott Woodward, the new athletic director. I know that's who you were thinking about on yesterday's show. In fact, it was like not long after yesterday's show wrapped up. We wound up getting the official release from LSU. And then 25 minutes later, they drop the next bombshell, or better yet, TexAgs.com drops the next bombshell. Yep. Scott Woodward as the athletic director. Then we want to find out earlier today that was official, like referee with a whistle. But was this the absolute quickest hire you've ever seen at LSU?
Well, it was the best approach to hire. Look, this thing had been taking place a while ago. Scott Woodward's no dummy, and he's got ties and connections here with some of the power brokers that run this thing and that weren't very happy with Joe Oliva. The call was made. Are you interested? Heck yeah, I'm interested. Let's see if we can do this. He joined the Baton Rouge Country Club 2 months ago. Come on now. He's got a camp down at Grand Isle. His parents still live here. This was his dream job. This was all. But what happened was LSU got their man in place first. Okay, we're doing this. Then they let Joe Oliva go. Normally what LSU does is they fire the guy and then they go, well, we got to get a search committee. We got to do this. We got to do that. That gives A&M more time to go and get their war chest ready. So it may be not the quickest, but it was the best handling of a change, I think, in the history of LSU athletics.
And I think I'd have to agree with you, Jordy. It definitely is probably one of the biggest ones in the history of LSU athletics, and it's going to wind up being an interesting one over the next few years. Can he be able to do it the same way that he did at Texas A&M? We shall see. That's something we'll wind up probably talking about a lot down the line. But I decided to kind of have a little fun here, Jordy, on this Thursday. And my goodness, I don't know if you saw this or not, Jordy, but apparently Gronk dented the Lombardi Trophy.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. How did he do that? Hit his head?
They were joking around, throwing the baseball around. And all of a sudden, they had the Lombardi Trophy out there for display. So Gronk actually picks it up like he's about to swing like a baseball bat, goes in for a bunt, and the thing just catches it. And it right on the football and dents it.
He immediately said,
take that out of my paycheck. Oh, my goodness, Jordy, it's awful.
It's awful. Go ahead, Gronk. Your legend continues to grow and grow. Way to go. Next.
Oh, Jordy, man, my goodness. Hey, what a heck of a way to go out, right?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Jordy, moving over. Big news coming out of the Bay Area, Jordy. KD,
that?
He committed to Oakland.
What?
Yeah, you heard me right. Jordy, KD committed to Oakland. Chris Davis, he committed to Oakland, Jordy. He agreed. That was the lead line in the A's press release.
You got me on that one.
Great is that from the Oakland
A's? That's awesome. Way to go, A's. Good sense of humor.
Oh, yeah, it's amazing.
Good sense of humor.
And,
absolutely.
You know, we got to talk, Jordy, about the NFL schedules. They got dropped last night all over the place. And I have to say, the football teams, social media guys, they had a lot of fun with it. Namely, the Atlanta Falcons. Had you seen their little schedule reveal video yet?
Yeah, the little brother. Little brother always trying to do something. Little brother always trying to figure something out. Yes.
So you saw the Ram running into the Saint?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Jordy. That
classic.
Yeah.
Classic.
And, of course, it has to be Game of Thrones. Just like half of the reveal videos were. My goodness. It got tiring after a while watching all those. Too many Game of Thrones. You can only do one.
Yes, enough is enough. Let's move on. I agree.
And you know, Jordy,
Falcons,
looking at the rest of the schedule for the Saints, though. I mean, they got that Thursday night game, Thanksgiving night, yeah. Saints-Falcons. Feels like that's going to wind up becoming a tradition on Thursday nights. I would not be against that.
I wouldn't either. It'd be great.
That being said, I was a little disappointed, Jordy, to see how the season starts off against the Houston Texans on Monday night. So you mean to tell me that I have to wait until Monday night to see the Saints play?
But the build-up will be great. The build-up. And we'll talk with Larry Holder about that shortly. But, no, that's good. Monday night on the stage, prime time, in the dome. Are you kidding me? How crazy is that place going to be? Yes, indeed.
Oh, it's going to be amazing, Jordy. But, again, it's just like I would have loved it to have been against a lot, like, higher quality of opponent as opposed to – this isn't meant to be shade towards –
Don't the be Houston sleeping Texans. On the Texans now. Come
but I'm
on.
Saying, like you probably – it would have been a lot more fun, like, let's say, you open up the season at home against, like, a really, really, really good team, a team that could very well be a contender in the NFC. Again, I'm just thinking about it from my perspective. It's not the sexiest game.
Well,
to start
it's not the Patriots. It's not that. But still, I mean, Deshaun Watson, J.J. Watt – Jadavian Clowney, come on now. Don't sleep on the Texans.
Oh, I'm not going to sleep on the Texans, right, Jordy, because they're definitely a really good team, but you just don't know what they're going to wind up being capable of at this point in time. That being said, Jordy, I want you to give me like a way too early prediction for the Saints season win-loss record real quick.
I haven't even looked at it yet, so no. not going to do that. I want to talk about the biggest story of the day.
Okay.
You ready for this one?
Let's go.
This sports bettor named James
Holzhauer,
right?
Yes.
Rewriting the Jeopardy record book. He was a perfect 40 for 40 in the last episode and won $131,127 for his 10th straight victory. He's got nearly $700,000 already in the bank for his 10-day run. How about that?
He is creeping up on legendary territory. Mind you, he's already swept almost all of the top five all-time like single-game winnings in that leaderboard.
Yeah.
And obviously, he's second only to Ken Jennings, who has like it was 2.7 million over like a three-year
74.
Period.
74 game winning streak
back
in 2004. How do you go 40 for 40? I mean, with those questions, how is that possible?
I don't know, Jordy, but it's amazing seeing him go 40 for 40 and do it the way they did and wind up walking away with $131,000. The dude is just, he's ballsy as all get out. It's amazing.
Look, his competitors had $5,400 and $5,000 respectively. So for the last question, you get to bet on your how much you want to bet out of your earnings. So he couldn't lose, but he bet 60 grand on it.
Well, hey,
60 grand.
I mean, if you know you're winning, why not kind of just drop it down and get things going? I think that would be awesome to have that moment where you're going to say, hey, I'm going to throw all my chips down on the table, proverbial chips, obviously, and say, hey, I'm going to win this one. Why not just add a little bit more and get to that record book? I think it's smart to see what he's doing.
He's amazing. No other contestant has ever won more than $77,000 on a single show. He's won more than $100,000 three times. Boom.
It's amazing, Jordy.
Boom. You're my new hero, Mr. Holzhauer.
I'd love to go gambling with that guy.
James, let's go. Let's go. All right, there's your Hot Topics for the day. Well done, CD. Busy second hour, but of course, Cajun Chef, the best hot sauce on the planet. Bring a small bottle with you wherever you go, because everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it. Larry Holder talking Saints schedule next here on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. Man, Jeopardy. I'm terrible at that game. Makes me feel inferior. It really does. And this dude just 40 for 40. Please stop. But we'll be right back.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Oh, what a rainy, miserable day, right? But, hey, yesterday the NFL released the 2019 schedules for all 32 teams, and the New Orleans Saints now know when they're going to play the teams that they're going to play and where they're going to play them. Larry Holder of The Athletic, kind enough to join us to break it all down. So, Larry, as the NFL draft approaches, now we know who the Saints are going to play and where they're going to play them. And, man, I tell you what, four playoff teams in the first month of the season. You've got the Texans, the Rams, the Seahawks, and the Cowboys. They only won at about a 69% clip last year. I know that doesn't matter to this coming year, but your thoughts about the early schedule?
Yeah, you look at it, and that's certainly the eye-opening part of it. As far as the quality of teams stacked together. And, you know, you open Monday night at home with the Texans, obviously that's a plus. And the Saints are, if you look at Vegas odds already, they're actually one of the bigger favorites already going into week one against the Texans, so that's good. But the back-to-back swing of at the Rams and at Seattle, you look at it and like, my gosh, back-to-back West Coast trips. But I could tell you the Saints are already – scouring the West Coast to see where they're going to practice that week, as in they're going to stay in the West Coast that entire week and then head up to Seattle at some point. So that's to be expected. And that's smart. I mean, that's what you should do when you're stuck with that. And then, of course, you've got the Cowboys game on Sunday night in week four. But everybody's eyes are going to be looking at week two, the entire NFL world is going to be looking already right this second. They're looking at week two against the Rams. That's a 3:25 kick. And people are wondering, oh, why isn't that prime time? And I'm sure the NFL was thinking, you know what, let's get this over with as early as possible and don't put it in prime time so it won't create as much attention as possible. And we don't even need to say why. We all know why.
That Seattle game right after that, you mentioned staying out on the West Coast. Saints haven't won there in a long, long time. Three consecutive losses in Seattle. So do you think Sean Payton looking at it goes, I know they want to win every game, but 2-2 in the first four, is that a bad thing?
I don't know if Sean Payton is saying that, but I'm saying that. I think 2-2 would be just fine. And that goes to the nature of the rest of the schedule. You look at everything else, and it seems pretty manageable. And and to me, you also look at it as if you'd rather play the Rams as early as possible just to wipe off that storyline off the map. It doesn't hold over your head the entire season. It's gone, and you got 14 other games, and you move on with your life. And so, but yeah, I think 2-2 is fair. Are they capable of beating all of those teams, Jordy? I think you and I would agree, yes. But you know how the NFL is. I mean, sometimes you lose a game that you're like, it's on the road. It's not an exact science, but yeah, 2-2 would be fine. 3-1 would be great, and you know, you get momentum going into the rest of the season. But yeah, it's 2-2 is a fair conservative effort, and let's not forget the Saints have not won an opening week game since 2013, and we're talking they didn't do it to 17, they didn't do it at 18. You're not. Look, they started 0-2, 0-2, 0-2.
You're right.
In 17, they started 0-2. Last year, they should have started 0-2. They should have lost to Cleveland at home,
yep.
but they
yeah.
somehow won that. And so it's yeah. Just remember, like, they can't afford to go in the same kind of trend of sluggish starts to open the season.
I've got to admit, I completely forgot about that, but you're absolutely right. The I do like that the schedule makers help the Saints out by scheduling Seattle in September and Chicago in October. You know, I know the Saints have won on in cold weather places before, but it doesn't seem like they do it very often. It's good to get those games out the way pretty early before you hit December.
Yeah, I would agree. And look, they've got at the end of the season, they go road at Tennessee, at Carolina. Well, it can be a little chilly, I would say, but still, it's not Seattle and it's not Chicago. So I would take those games early. And but yeah, it's something that the Saints beat all comers on the road last year, and then you look at the road schedule. The road schedule seems far more difficult than the home schedule, and yet last year the Saints were better on the road than they were at home. So this year, it's got to be all about taking care of business at home. And, mm-hmm. man, and you know, slipping up, if you're going to slip up, maybe have a slip up on the road, and you could be okay with that. But you got to be able to take care of business at home a little bit better. Than they did last year. And granted, look, obviously they were good everywhere they played last year. So we're kind of nitpicking at this point.
Yeah. Larry Holder, The Athletic. It seems like now that Atlanta and New Orleans are becoming like LSU and Alabama. They both have a bye week before they play each other in New Orleans. So no rest advantage when coming off of a bye this season for the Saints.
Well, that and... they put them on the same night 2 years in a row in prime time where all eyes are watching Thanksgiving night. This time it's at Atlanta. It's becoming more like LSU, Alabama, even more in that sense, too. I think the NFL saw a nice rating, and so they figured they'd do it again. And it seems like every year LSU now and – oh, shoot. Geez, now you got that in my head. Falcons. That's okay. Saints and Falcons. Play a Thursday night game somewhere along the line every year. And so this is no surprise. And at least for the Saints this year, they're not playing two Thursday night games, which is a rarity. That doesn't normally happen like it did last year. But they had it back-to-back, so schedule makers didn't totally, hose them. But the NFL knows the value of a Saints-Falcons game at this point. It's become apparent. I can't remember, outside of maybe a traditional team like, say, Detroit or Dallas playing the same team back-to-back years, I can't remember since they added this third game. I seriously doubt it's ever happened where the same two teams, they put them on Thanksgiving Day the same, back-to-back years. I don't think that's ever happened.
And the Saints have to play Carolina on that Sunday before, so it's a short, I kind of like the Thanksgiving night game, but having a team to root for, I don't know about you. You may have, that may deter you from some family things, but as far as me being on the couch, I don't mind it at all.
Oh, I guarantee you I'm flying out Thursday morning, but I don't like to stay in Atlanta any longer than I have to. And I don't think many people fly out Thanksgiving morning anywhere, so I'm sure I'll be able to catch a flight just fine. But
good
also, Jordy, in that stretch, and that's like the third quarter of the season stretch. They play all four NFC South games, and that is certainly not the norm. I've compared it once I saw it. I thought, oh, it's like Amen Corner. Like you turn in the corner at the Masters, and you can start to move. That third round of the Masters, mm-hmm. always called moving day. That third quarter of the season for the Saints, that could be a moving day for them, because if that division is tightened up and you play well in that stretch, that's when you can separate yourself and get yourself in the driver's seat going to those final four games.
Larry Holder, The Athletic. Some good athletic quarterbacks the Saints are going to face: Deshaun Watson, Russell Wilson, Dak Prescott, Mitch Trubisky, Kyler Murray in all probabilities. So the defense, while they've gotten a little bit faster and more athletic, they'll have some challenges ahead of them. Nothing's easy in the league, right? Nothing.
Oh, yeah. Well, throwing Andrew Luck, he's certainly athletic as well. Marcus Mariota's pretty athletic, too. And, of course, you're always dealing with Cam Newton, who's athletic. So, yeah, it's going to be a different kind of crew of quarterbacks that the Saints don't regularly face. So, I think it's going to put to the test Dennis Allen's chess skills at what he's going to be doing and such. And so, their opponents, like I said, it's not like the Saints play Seattle all the time, and they don't obviously know play the AFC South a ton. And, they played Chicago. It's not like they play Chicago a lot. They played Trubisky's rookie year, but they did not play him last year, obviously. So we knew the teams. But how it's laid out, and they're going to face Jimmy Garoppolo, San Francisco.
Yeah.
So that's certainly a different look. And a quarterback I know Sean Payton has a lot of respect for, considering he was very, very close way back in that draft. I'm blanking on the year. Might have been like 14 or something, that Jimmy G might have been a Saint if Sean Payton would have had his way.
Interesting stuff. Larry Holder, you going to give a prediction? What's the schedule? How's it play out? Or have you had a chance to really delve into it?
I didn't go game by game. I guess I don't know why I just don't do that. But I just looked at it and think, the way it maps out, say you start 2-2, I think 10 wins certainly has to be in the radar. I'd say the over-under is 10 wins. I mean, Maybe I'm gauging on the last 2 years, because I do think there's still that defensive line I have some question marks about for the Saints. And if that thing is leaky like it has been in the past, before the last 2 years, there could be some issues. But it just spells out at least 10 wins to me. I mean, I could make an argument for 11 or 12, but I'd say the conservative
10.
Amount would be 10, just looking at how it all shapes up.
Larry, thank you, buddy. Have a great Easter, and I appreciate the time as always.
All right, Jordy, good talking to you as always.
All right, Larry Holder, The Athletic. We'll take a time out here. KD, you know me. You know who I am. Does Grant Hughes? Yeah, he does. He's next.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
Yes, the NBA playoffs are well underway, and some surprising series going on as we speak. Grant Hughes, feature writer for Bleacher Report, kind enough to join us. Grant, thanks for the time. Which series has surprised you the most so far?
Yeah, I mean, there's no shortage, really, right? We've had several upsets, at least in the game ones didn't go as a lot of people expected. In hindsight, it doesn't feel like it's a surprise, because we've just seen these two games, but a lot of people thought Oklahoma City would have a little trouble upsetting the Blazers, and here they are down 0-2. So that's got to be, right up there at the top.
Okay, near and dear to your heart, the Warriors and the Clippers, they play tonight, the late game series tied at 1-1, and KD is at it again. Listen, and then we'll talk about it on the flip side. It's coming. Maybe not. Anyway, sorry about that. Technical difficulties. But let's listen to it. Play it now.
Well, we had a nice flow of the game. You know, let's go back to the whole last month of the season. We've been playing this way for a while. And when we got to this series, game one, we had some nice momentum. They're playing a gimmick defense, which has been working, top blocking everything on the perimeter. So guys not even looking at the three-point line. They just forcing guys inside the three-point line. So for us, when I get the ball in my spots, I got a pest, Patrick Beverly, who was up underneath me. Well, I could definitely shoot over top and score every time if it's a one-on-one situation. But we got a guy that's dropping and helping, and then we got another guy that's just sitting on me waiting for me to dribble the basketball. If I put the basketball on the floor, I could probably make 43% of my shots if I shoot them like that. But that's not really going to do nothing for us at with the outcome of the game, because we got a nice flow. Everybody touching the rock, everybody shooting and scoring. So
I'm not gonna get in the way of the game because, you know, I want to have a little back and forth with Patrick Beverly. I'm Kevin Durant. You know who I am. Y'all know who I am.
There you go. You know who I am. What is your take on that, Grant?
Oh man, there's so much there. I mean, first of all, he's really not wrong in anything he said. And you know, I love when players actually give us, you know, a little glimpse into it. When they talk about basketball and you know, beyond cliches, and he's really giving you sort of, you know, what's happening out there. I think so with that said, I think everything he said checks out logically. I think it's right. But then you have to kind of measure that against the optics of it, which in the first game, Beverly clearly got under his skin, got themselves, both of them got tossed, which is a huge win for the Rockets, just if you're comparing the value of each guy. Yeah. And in the second game, you could see Durant almost like trying to prove that what Beverly was doing wasn't bothering him, like kind of, get, you know, really just in his mannerisms. And when Beverly was pushing on him, he'd throw his hands up, you know, looking at the ref like, hey, are you seeing this? What am I supposed to do? Type of stuff. But he turned it over 9 times. He had 4 offensive fouls and a half. So obviously it got to him there too. I don't think the answer is turning and shooting over him, because I think he's right. I mean, offensively the Warriors can do better than that. But the Warriors need to find a way to let Durant sort of be the just the electric scorer that he is. And that's not isolation to me. That's transition. That's quick post-ups. That's duck-ins. That's screens off the ball, that kind of thing. To get him going, because, you know, he's not shooting enough, and I understand the value of keeping the ball moving and all that stuff, but the Warriors have got to kind of find a way to get to kind of have it both ways. And I think they can. It's just, you know, Durant's got to kind of commit to it.
More turnovers than shots. Are you kidding me? 9-8? Yeah. That is crazy. Grant Hughes, Bleacher Report, kind enough to join us. Sixers and Nets are interesting. Joel Embiid's laughing after he almost took the guy's head off. He and Ben Simmons. Seems like an immature team to me from the outside. They certainly act that way. What are your senses?
Well, I mean, they're young, so, you know, if you wanted to give them a pass for that, you probably could. But I think, you know, certainly I guarantee there are a lot of people with that elbow that Embiid laid on Jared Allen that would have said, like, that's just, you go back 25 years, that's just a good post move, basically.
That's right.
But, you know, he drilled him. I mean, right in the chops. It's a foul now 100% of the time. Borderline dirty play, I guess, by today's standards. I think, you know, all that aside, if you're the Sixers, you know, you hung 51 points in a quarter on this Nets defense in game 2. You can just physically overwhelm them at every single position, which is what happened in game 2. So the blueprint for the rest of the series is pretty easy, you know, sniping back and forth aside, you know, sound bites aside. The Sixers just have physically overwhelming guys, Simmons and Embiid at the top of the list. Jimmy Butler's on that list too, that the Nets really just can't contend with. So I think you could make the case that the Nets are better coached. They're deeper. They, you know, came in with, I think, was a better plan. They've, you know, had a lot more smart adjustments to my eye, but, you know, it's the playoffs and that may not matter because the Sixers just have guys that can run you over. So kind of that's the snapshot of this series now, you know, amid all the talking.
I'm with you. Is there a team under more pressure and under the microscope more than the Toronto Raptors tied one game apiece with Orlando?
I mean, that was a bad looking game 1 for sure to drop that one, especially the way it happened with the defensive miscommunication and DJ Augustine hitting the winner. But the Magic shot, I think, 14-29 from 3 in game 1. And obviously we saw in game 2, that's just not, they're not going to do that again. So, I mean, the Raptors are under a lot of pressure, and dropping game 1 again, which they do every single year, was a bad look. But, I mean, if you watch Kawhi Leonard, and it's another instance of just physical talent just overwhelming another team.
Right.
Leonard just did whatever he wanted in game 2. And, I mean, sorry, the Magic are a great defensive team, but 1, they can't score with Toronto, and 2, they just don't. I mean, Aaron Gordon is not going to stop Kawhi Leonard. He's their best option. It's not going to happen. So it's interesting how, you know, some of these game 1s went unexpectedly, and then game 2 really course corrected in a lot of cases.
They sure did. Kyrie Irving, playoff time. When he's on, there's not a better scorer in the league, and they lead the Pacers 2-0. Now his stock is going through the roof again, and New York Knicks fans are all excited again.
Yeah, right. It's funny how maybe Boston is the second most excited about him. But, you know, if you're looking for a team that I'm not really sold on after the, you know, these first couple games, Boston to me, obviously Indiana's another team that can't score.
Right.
They just, you know, they don't have the horses. But, you know, and defense is great. That's fine. Boston really hasn't scored either. Outside of Irving's 37, they've had a really hard time putting up points. And against a team that can score, you know, at even an average rate for a playoff team, I think maybe they run into some problems. But up 2-0, you know, it's hard to get too worried about Indiana just because, you know, where's the breakout game going to come from for the Pacers to make this a longer series? I'm not sure I see it.
Grant Hughes, Bleacher Report. I've got to talk about the team in New Orleans. Your thoughts on the hiring of David Griffin as their direct vice president of basketball operations?
I mean, talk about a guy that can win the press conference, right? I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know what that's worth, but it's got some value. And I mean, I thought it was interesting that, I mean, to me, Griffin was by far the number one executive out there, right? You know, you would have thought that just, you know, yeah, he had LeBron in Cleveland, but, you know, he made it to three straight finals. He worked with Steve Kerr in Phoenix. He's, you know, well-respected. He's got all these relationships around the league, which, you know, you really need if you're going to potentially try to trade a superstar like Anthony Davis. But, yeah, I mean, I think Griffin's really qualified. I think, you know, he's dealt with clutch sports before, obviously, having, you know, been the GM over LeBron James. So maybe that's a factor. I think it's optimistic to think he can convince Davis to stay. That bridge feels pretty well torched to me. But I would have about as much confidence in him getting a good return for Davis as really anybody else out there. I think, you know, it's a really good first step in a pivotal offseason for the Pelicans.
Perception, right? I mean, the perception has finally gotten to the point where now the Pelicans, I think, around the league, oh, okay, now they're getting serious. They're really serious about basketball. And let's see what they can do. So he made some outrageous demands, and Miss Gail Benson agreed to it. So it sounds like, and that's a beginning. It sounds like they're doing things the right way finally.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, the fact that they got him so quickly with other openings out there, I would have thought for sure that, you know, the Lakers would have done something, or, you know, there's just several other teams that, you know, the Pelicans must, I would love to know how much power he has and how much he's going to take home paycheck-wise, because you would think it'd be significant. But, yeah,
I think so.
Look, the Pelicans, you know, if this Anthony Davis thing doesn't happen this year and it doesn't turn into a giant mess, I mean, they're a borderline playoff team. They made it the year before. So, yeah, I think there's definitely reason for optimism.
If you were a highfalutin executive in the NBA, what's a better job, the Pelicans as they are right now or the L.A. Lakers as they are right now?
Man, I don't know. The fact that it's even a question really tells you what's you know, the diminished sort of perception of the Lakers. I think it's, you know, I'll tell you this. I think the challenge of being an executive on a team that has LeBron James is maybe the biggest challenge in the league. And it's maybe the best way to set yourself up to fail in the league. So I think I'd rather have the Pelicans job because, look, you're coming into a situation where, you know, you're not going to be worse than your predecessor, chances are.
Right.
So you're going to look good by comparison. And then with the Lakers, the expectations are so unreasonable. The personnel there is tricky. And from the ownership group down, I don't really think they understand how to sort of build a winner in, you know, the NBA of 2019. So, yeah, give me the Pelicans job.
I'm with you. All right, Grant Hughes, Bleacher Report. We'll see how it all shakes out. Thank you for your time, and have a great Easter out there on the West Coast, my friend.
You got it. Thanks.
All right, buddy. Grant Hughes, Bleacher Report. We will take a timeout. We'll come back. Last segment of the show. Oh, the Schwab. Yes, Frank Schwab. More NFL talk next.
Chris Young, live, Raised on Country Tour.
I was raised on country.
September 5th, 7 p.m., Cajun Dome. Chris Young, hit after amazing hit. With special guests, Chris Jansen.
Can't buy anything.
And Low Cash.
Reserve seat tickets on sale Friday, April 19th at 10 a.m. at Live Nation and Ticketmaster. Chris Young, Raised on Country Tour.
Fun and friendly, loose and easy. Take me back to Cypress by you. Take me back where I love to play. Action's hot both night and day. Stakes are always second to none. And the win is so much fun and friendly, loose and easy. Back to Cypress by you casino.
Take Highway 90 to the Baldwin exit.
Join KDCT-TV at Randall's Restaurant Tuesday, April 23rd at 6 o'clock for another taping of Le Bon Temps Roulet. Dance to the music of Jacob LeBlanc Friends and then Donnie Broussard and the Louisiana Stars. Come out to Randall's, dance and be a part of the show, then watch Le Bon Temps Roulet Tuesday nights at 6 and Sunday afternoons at 2:30 on KDCG. Don't miss our next taping of Le Bon Temps Roulet Tuesday, April 23rd at 6 p.m. with Jacob LeBlanc Friends and then Donnie Broussard and the Louisiana Stars.
Want a more beautiful lawn this season? The Home Depot has a few suggestions. In one bag, Scott's Turf Builder Southern Triple Action, starting at just $24.99. It feeds your lawn, it weeds your lawn, and it prevents fire ants for up to 6 months. Three of the most common lawn problems, one great solution. Today is the day for doing with Scott's Turf Builder Southern Triple Action, starting at just $24.99 a bag. Now at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. While supplies last, Continental U.S. only.
ShopRite Tobacco Plus discount outlets. Whether you need gas for your car, tobacco products, excellent fast food, or a good bottle of beer or wine, we have a large variety to choose from at ShopRite convenience stores. For those on the go, breakfast or lunch at a ShopRite store is a must. At ShopRite convenience stores, you'll find newspapers, magazines, maps, just about anything for your travel needs. So if you're anywhere in central and southern Louisiana, you'll find a ShopRite store near you. So there's no need to search any further. At all ShopRite convenience stores, you'll find just what you're looking for. We're a one-stop shop for all your needs. You really can shop right at ShopRite.
103.7 The Game presents the Chris Young Raised on Country Music Tour coming to Lafayette's Cajun Dome Thursday, September 5th, with special guests Chris Jansen and Low Cash. Tickets go on sale Friday. 103.7 The Game has your free tickets with them before you buy them. Text YOUNG to 68683. That's YOUNG to 68683. Win tickets to see Chris Young. Find out more at 103.7thegame.com.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, and on the app.
Okay, time to bring in the Schwab. Yes, indeed, Frank Schwab, editor of Shutdown Corner, Yahoo Sports. The NFL schedule is out. So, Frank, who's going to win the Super Bowl, Frank? I'm kidding.
I better say New Orleans Saints, or I don't think you're going to bring me back for any more.
Hey, they start off with some. They got to go. They got the Texans, and they've got to go to the Rams. They've got Seattle back to back West Coast teams. I mean, it's not an easy start for my Saints.
Yeah, I mean, you start to look at it, and I think that's, you know, everybody kind of. People get really crazy about schedule release date, and there's kind of this blowback of, oh, you know, why do people get crazy about this? Because you can see this season now, how it's going to play out. And like you said, in the Saints' case, boy, that first Monday night game is not easy. Deshaun Watson and the Texans, they were a very good team last year.
Yeah.
You go on the road to face the Rams, and then you face the Seahawks. Those are three playoff teams right out of the gate. You already know you got a tough NFC South, so you can kind of see – you know, if you're a Saints fan, you're probably saying, boy, what would it take in these first three games? Is 2-1 good enough? Can you survive 2-1-2? Is it possible to 3-0? So that's the beauty of scheduled date. A lot of it is, hey, I want to go watch the Saints play in Charlotte this year, whatever. You know, I mean, whatever road trips people have planned. But I don't think a ton of people do that. I think mostly it's just fans want to see, is my team going to be able to get off to a good start? And if, you know, they have to rally late, who do they play in week 16, 17? And, you know,
yeah.
That's kind of the beauty of the schedule release.
They've got the strength. The schedule is 22nd. I don't know all this stuff. It looks like a new tradition's being started. They take on their arch rival, the Atlanta Falcons, on a Thanksgiving Day. This time on a Thanksgiving night, both teams with a bye before it. So that's interesting to say the least.
I was surprised by that. I, you know, the the NFL, two of its three Thanksgiving games are repeats. The Bears and the Lions are going to play in the early game, and they played last year, obviously. But I get that. When I saw that, I was like, yeah, that makes sense. You have to give the Lions an interesting game. We don't know if the Lions are going to be any good this year. I guess if we had to predict, we'd probably say they're going to be mediocre at best. So you have to give them a compelling matchup, and the Bears are compelling. I said, okay, that makes sense. For the other game, the NFL could have picked basically any other game they wanted to. Mm-hmm. They could have made a decision to pick. They could have put New Orleans, Kansas City on Thanksgiving night if they wanted to. They could have, you know, they could have rearranged the schedule in any single way they wanted to. So I was surprised. The Saints and Falcons are a very good rivalry. They're two good teams. They're fun. They're interesting. It'll be interesting to see if maybe they're trying to start something, a tradition here. I'm just interested and curious and can't really figure out, and no offense to the Saints or the Falcons, but why would you just repeat that when you could literally pick, for the most part, between 256 games to put in that slot? Why would you pick that one again?
Yeah. We'll see. It very curious and interesting to me. September 15th, the Saints will be taking on the L.A. Rams in L.A. It's not a primetime game. The NFL kind of wants to hide that game, don't they?
Yeah, I think you're right. I really do. I think that, you know, they know. They know the stories. They, you know, when we did our top 10 games on the schedule last night, that was number one. That's the game. I think that
was it. Okay.
It's a game between the two great teams, and you have the controversy, and you have the revenge factor. And, you know, I wish it would have been a prime time. I thought that would have been fun. But I don't disagree with you necessarily that the NFL probably wasn't upset to give Fox that game to say, you know, because Fox could protect a certain amount of games, right? Like, the Fox can Fox can kind of speak up and say, no, we want Saints-Rams. And I'm sure in the back of their minds, the NFL is kind of like, okay, that kind of works out well for us. Let's do that. So they're not, you know, Chris Collinsworth and Al Michaels aren't talking about the missed call for 3 hours on the rules.
That's right.
So, but it's still going to be a great game, and still millions and millions and millions of people are going to watch. I mean, that is, look, I agree. Shalice Manza Young, my coworker, wrote that top 10, but I agree. I think if you're taking every single game on this NFL schedule, which is the number one game I want to see, I think it is Saints Rams. I think that's going to be just a heck of a football game, and we're going to find out pretty early on if you know, and who's a contender among those two teams. If both are contenders, maybe we'll learn a lot.
Frank Schwab, shutdown corner for Yahoo Sports, kind enough to join us. Boy, they're high on the Cleveland Browns, aren't they? They're putting them in primetime events early and often.
You know, somebody brought this up to me this morning. I was doing another radio thing, and I hadn't thought of it this way, but I actually very much agree with it. The NFL kind of hedged its bets with the Browns. I was surprised the Browns didn't get a maximum of 5 primetime games, because as I sit here today, I can't tell you if the Browns are going to be good. I can't tell you if they're going to be the most compelling team by the end of the season. I mean, who knows? The Packers might go 15-1. We don't know at this point who's going to kind of maybe be this year's Chiefs or whatever. But I can tell you, as I sit here right now, that the Browns are the most compelling team in the NFL. There's a ton of talent. They got Odell Beckham. They've had all these years of losing. Everybody wants to see kind of if they're going to break out of that. And I think that everybody, a lot of NFL fans, kind of soft spot for the Browns. I mean, it's just, how could you root against them? Unless you're from Pittsburgh, like, or Cincinnati, it's just one of those, how could you hate the Browns? Like, I think their fans deserve a winner. I think that everybody wants to see this young, exciting team be good, but yet, here we go, and they front-loaded a lot of these Browns games. So that's what I mean by the NFL hitching its bets. I think they're on Sunday night or Monday night football in weeks 2, 4, and 5, I think, maybe 2, 3, and 5. So 3 of the first 5 weeks, they're on Sunday night or Monday night football, and then only once the rest of the year. So I think that's the NFL. Maybe this is just totally coincidence, and they didn't mean it this way and all that. But I think they kind of said, all right, we know everybody wants to see the Browns.
I don't believe that. Yeah, I don't. I think they do everything calculating.
So it might be that, and I don't think this is wrong necessarily. I think it's kind of smart. They're kind of saying everybody wants to see the Browns. All right, we'll give you the Browns early in the season. But if the Browns become the Browns, we're not giving you a 4-10 Browns team in mid-December on Monday Night Football. Right? So they need to prove a little bit. And you know what? I think if you're being honest, and if the Browns fans usually are brutally honest, they'd probably say, yeah, that's fair. We got to prove it. Give us our prime time games early on, and if we're good enough, we'll get flexed into maybe one or two more. But, you know, there is that specter of, hey, what if the Browns are bad? Let's make sure we get all these games early in the year before we know what's going to happen.
Get it early and often and get it out of the way. We'll see. Are they still having those flex things at the end of the year for television?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Sunday Night Football still has the flex, and that just allows. I mean, that's. I wish they could flex Monday night
all
and Thursday night, so that gets impossible with the travel and stuff. But it's it really protects them because that's the thing. I the NFL does its best. They have a lot of mouths to feed. That now that the Fox Thursday Night Football package is a lot more expensive. Fox paid a lot of money, and they know we need to give games to Fox on Thursday. We need to give games to our best games to NBC on Sunday Night Football. They've turned that into their flagship franchise. We still need to make ESPN happy because they're paying $1 billion for Monday Night Football. We still want good games there. And we also have to make CBS and Fox happy on Sundays. How do we do this? How do you predict in April what's going to be a good matchup? A great example of this is San Francisco 49ers last year had a maximum of 5 primetime games. That made perfect sense. They were hot at the end of last year. Jimmy Garoppolo, rising team. And then Jimmy Garoppolo blows his ACL, and we're watching Nick Mullins in primetime. There's a lot of things that they can't predict.
That's right.
I think as they go about it, they really, they do try to get the best matchups possible. Sometimes it just doesn't work out for bad luck reasons. At least with Sunday Night Football, they can say, all right, well, the Pittsburgh Steelers ended up being 3-11 this year. Let's get a better game in there. This just isn't going to work out. I wish there was more of that because, none of us want to get stuck with that just total dud of a Monday night game in December.
Is Frank Schwab heading to Nashville?
No, I won't be there. I'll be working from home on that. The people who go there are going to have a great time. It's not to get into inside baseball for anybody who cares, but covering the draft on site is very tough. It's very spread out. You got to go. Yes. You got to walk a long way, and I'll be fine. I'll be fine letting our people on the ground handle that while I'm watching the various feeds. People love going to the draft. I already know. There's a lot of my friends who have already been like, we're going to Vegas for the draft in 2000. I think it's 2020. And, they're ready. They are ready to hit Vegas for the draft. And God bless them. I'm not sure I could sit in an arena and listen to seventh-round draft picks, but it's a popular deal. The NFL's hit on something again. They are masterful at turning everything into an event. Because, yes, there are people interested in the schedule release. There certainly is. A lot of people were talking about it yesterday.
Hey, Frank, I hate to interrupt you, buddy, but I got to go. We're done. Have a happy Easter, and thank you.
Not too much. Thank you.
All right, buddy. Take care. That's going to wrap everything up. Have a great rest of your Thursday.